you are like just kind of down that the Broncos are not in it. Is there, yeah, okay. I woke up this morning just kind of feeling, oh, man, should be there. All right, I'm going to move forward. I told you that that there's this kind of grand narrative. Oh, by the way, I do want to tell you, next week we start a new series, Spiritually Formed. We're going to start this next week because it's going to take us through Lent. If you haven't been part of the journey, I just kind of want to let you know the journey follows the church calendar, meaning we celebrate Advent, Lent, and all the things through the church calendar. And so Lent will start after Ash Wednesday in about a week and a half. And throughout Lent, we are going to be doing this series, Spiritually Formed. And we're going to do a lot of different things through Lent that lead us up to the Agape Feast and up to Easter Sunday, where we celebrate the resurrection. We'll tell you more about that. But be looking for this next Sunday. We'll start that series. As I was saying, I like to often go back to just kind of the story of God and make it really simple. I think it helps people just to see that your story is part of a grand story. So you're not just this kind of disconnected person, this human that's just out here among other people, kind of knocking into each other. But you actually can be part of something, something much bigger. And so this grand story is actually really, really simple. So I put it up there just to kind of give you the basics of it. In Genesis 1 and 2, we get these two stories. They're kind of different stories, but they're really the same story. They're the story of creation. And if you read Genesis 1, it's very poetic. It's a poetic understanding of how God creates the world. And I'm always intrigued by how God created the world, because even when I say God created the world, I realize that there are people in here all over the place on what that looks like. Some of you in here might think the world was created in, like, you know, 10,000 years ago. God just made everything. Some people will think, like, 13.8 billion years ago, God created everything. And I always like to say, however God created is of, like, such small importance to me compared to who created. And so at the Journey, we don't tend to kind of argue about things. It's just not what we do. We try to find the things that gather people together. And that's an example. We like to remind ourselves it is who, not the how. And so who created, we believe strongly it was God that created. And we believe strongly that God is continuing to create and create us and create us into being images of him. And so once that happened, we get to Genesis 3 through 11. And you'll see there's four stories of a broken world. And so this gets really simple. You get Genesis 1 and 2, God creates. Then Genesis 3 through 11 are these narratives about how the world broke. And again, the beauty of these stories, and many people think these are literal stories. There are some people who think they're figurative. Wherever you're at on that, these stories remind us of exactly how God kind of, not he didn't leave us, but how we left him. And so I give you these examples. You'll see the first one, which is the start of Genesis 3, Adam and Eve. Very familiar story. Humans rebel against God. They basically say, we do not want anything to do with God anymore. And in rebelling against God, it is something that still happens. It's a narrative that hasn't really stopped. Then we get to Cain and Abel, and what happens is humans start to hurt each other to the point that they'll murder each other. They'll do violence to each other, actual physically hurt each other. Still happening today. Then we get to Genesis 6. And by the way, you can read all of these things, Genesis 1 through 11. I would encourage it right at the beginning of the Bible. Genesis 6, we get Noah and the flood. And that narrative is that humans will ignore God. They may even know there is a God. This may be the one that's the most popular in our culture. I think there's a God. I believe there's a God. But I don't really care. A lot of apathy. That is still happening. And then we get to that final narrative where everything's just kind of building, and we get to the Tower of Babel, which is in Genesis towards the end of there, and you can understand just how far humans can go away from God, because in the Tower of Babel, humans see themselves as God. They're going to build this tower. They're going to build this big structure to basically say, we are our own gods. Again, still happening today. This story is not just an ancient myth. I think it is a true story about how people are, how humans handle their relationship with God. And so it's right here where God sees all of this, and he goes, something has to change. Like, there has to be a fundamental change. So Genesis 12, all the way through the end of the Bible, Revelation, is this fundamental change. Everything is different from Genesis 12 on. And you can kind of think of Genesis 12 through Revelation as really the whole rest of the story. And it's the same basic story, that God decides to change human history by providing a mission for people to follow. That people should see themselves on a mission. That there is something about your life that should count for something. And so this is how Genesis 12 talks. The Lord had said to Abraham, he said, go from your country, your people, your father's household, and I want you to go to the land I will show you. Verse 2, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I'm going to make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. One of the great phrases in the entire Bible. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. By the way, that includes us. Because of this promise, all the way back in Genesis 12, all peoples on earth, including us today, 2026, we are blessed because of this promise from God, this covenant. He starts it, and I highlighted that word go. In Hebrew, the word go there basically means to launch. But at its core, what it means is get going or get adventuring. I've always liked this idea. It's like God comes out after all of the mess of Genesis 3 through 11, and he says, I need you to go on an adventure with your life. Do not sit tight and do nothing. Go and do something with your life. Go and adventure. Go and launch. And I think this tends to be the mission that everybody's called to, but we all think maybe somebody else is supposed to be doing that work. Like maybe we weren't gifted enough, or we're not, you know, smart enough, or we're not, you know, we've had too many problems or too many failures. And so we hear that, go. You even hear me saying it, and me saying, this is a mission for all people. It's the story of Abraham, but it's for you as well. And it's pretty easy to shirk that responsibility, that there are certain people who have that responsibility. And though I think Abraham was a very specific, actual person sent on a mission from God, I believe this story is the image we are all supposed to be bearing. That you, right in your seat, right where you're at, me, right here, right where I'm at, we are supposed to be on a mission for God. And all the rest of human history is this. This is it. And there's a bunch of things that happen and a bunch of ideas and values and principles and rules that we're supposed to follow and all that kind of stuff people try to get lost in a little bit. But at its core, this is it. And the reason people struggle, including myself, is when we forget our real mission. We start to think we're supposed to be finding other things important except our core mission, which is this. And verses 2 through 3 then provide an important idea for us as to what our mission is. You can read that there. I will bless you. I said earlier, that was my grandma's kind of final wish. Let's count our blessings. Even at the end of her life, I have been blessed. God will bless you. Now, sometimes we get pretty negative. I do. We can complain and we can grumble, and I understand that. And we can forget that there are blessings in this world. But this is the promise. You should go on an adventure, whatever, wherever you're at, whatever's happened to you, whatever's going on in your life, go on an adventure, and I will bless you. Now, for Abraham, that means leave your country, leave everything, go away, because he was going to start a whole new nation through Abraham. For you, I don't know what your adventure looks like, but this is what it says the second part. And you will be a blessing. I will bless you so you can be a blessing. This gets really simple for every one of us. If you're trying to figure out what to do with your life, what it means to be a Christian, how do I follow Jesus in these ways, your mission's simple. You are blessed to be a blessing. You are blessed to be a blessing. Everything that's happened in your life can be used to be a blessing for other people. Everything. The world is broken. The world is not right. It is not how it's supposed to be. That is all of us cumulatively. That is all our faults. That is not somebody else's fault. It is us. Humans are broken. Genesis 3 through 11 makes it very obvious. That was written thousands of years ago. Here we are thousands of years later, and there's chaos everywhere. Broken people in a broken world. And we are supposed to do something about it by blessing people. If you look at the question I asked you a couple of weeks ago in the middle of this series, I said, what is the subtle but unmistakable reason that God made you the way he did? I hope you've been thinking on this. I hope you've been kind of like trying to process it. I asked you, go ask some people what it is if you're not sure. Ask God to make it obvious. What is this subtle but unmistakable reason, God, that you made me the way I did? That's kind of your call. This is what God has produced in you. The mission is what you do with that subtle but unmistakable reason. That's what you should actually be doing. So let me give you a simple structure today for making your life a daily mission, a daily adventure alongside God. And really, it's a structure that allows even the most mundane life. You may be looking at me today, hearing me, and going, I got a pretty boring life. I'm not doing anything special. Adventure is far from the word you would be using for my life. If you follow this structure, you can make a reality of any life into a blessing for others. And so, it's pretty simple. If your mission is to bless because of your blessings, the first thing is you have to launch. You have to get going. You have to see your life as having more meaning than just comfort, like we talked about last week. I think most people get stuck at this point. They come with an idea of how to be a blessing. I've had people say this to me. I had an idea, but I don't know. Maybe somebody else should be doing it. Maybe it's fear or embarrassment or the risk of failure or criticism. I often think about what it looks like to go on an adventure. I go back often to Jeff Bezos, back when he was like more normal. I'm thinking like 90s Jeff Bezos, not all roided out and all of that. He was thinking of starting Amazon, and he has this great story about it. He called it his regret minimization framework. And I really liked it because that's the kind of thing Jeff Bezos would call it, the regret minimization framework. He said, I want to remove the short-term emotion and focus on my mission rather than just wanting to sit in comfort because of fear or embarrassment or criticism or failure. So he gave three simple rules to follow. I have thought of these for the last 25 years since I first got this. He said, project your life into the future. Imagine you're like 80, 90 years old and you're about done. Look back at the life you've lived. Let's try to project your life as far into the future as you can. Look back at the life you've lived and ask how you could live in a way that would create the least regret. And then go back to where you are now and make decisions in that way. He said he used this when he started Amazon, but he also started to use this for everything. And he realized if it failed, that would not be the regret. The regret would be in not trying something, not doing something. He didn't want to be reckless or take blind risks, but he wanted to do something with his life. And this is the crux of what it means to consider your mission for God. That whatever comes to you, your idea of how you could be a blessing, no matter how small or how big, you stop and you ask yourself some questions. What would it be like to not do this thing? Because in the long term, humans regret inaction more than they tend to regret action. So I encourage you, find some ways to serve. If you're wondering, how do I be a blessing? This is where it starts. How do I serve people? There is not a thing in this world that isn't actually about serving other people. There's some ways to do this. I'm going to put a few of them. The first one, just real practical, is serve with your skills. Serve with the strengths that you have. You are good at some things. You're good at least one thing. There's one thing you're at least good at, but there's probably a couple. And the truth is, you're probably good at least one thing or a few things that are better than the high majority of people in the world. And definitely better than most of the people around you. You're just good at it. Find ways to use that skill to bless other people. Maybe now you make some money doing it. Maybe now you just kind of have it and you kind of enjoy it because it's a hobby or something that you do. But find ways to take that skill, that strength, and bless other people. In fact, Jesus provides a whole parable about this in Matthew 25, verses 24 through 40. When you're going to read Genesis 1 through 11, I would also have you fast forward and go up to Matthew 25 and read that. Matthew 25 through 28 is the whole end of Jesus' life. And right in 25, he basically tells you, you have talent. Use your talent. He actually says, don't bury your talent. Don't bury your skills and strengths. Take them out and use them. In fact, this is what he really says. It's kind of cool. You should be increasing exponentially your talents. Most people go, well, I'm good at this or this or this. God actually says, Matthew 25, you should take your skills and strengths and add more skills and strengths over the years. You should become more useful to people around you. Make more skills that you don't have now. He says, if you do that, the more you will be able to not only be blessed, but bless other people. More so, whether you're using your skills or strengths, any of us can serve through our sacrifice. We can sacrifice time, money, energy. We can do things that maybe aren't natural skills to us, but we can just help out. You can find ways to just be a useful and helpful person to at least somebody. Most of the things you can do to serve God and others, including even here at The Journey, require sacrifice more than they require skills. I have to be willing to serve other people. I have to be willing to say, I want to help God in the world, his action in the world, by launching myself in such a way that other people are blessed because I am in their life. And then the final one, serve with your weaknesses. Sometimes when we focus on our weaknesses, we assume they sort of disqualify us in our mission from God. Like there are other people who don't have weaknesses, don't have struggles. Like there are other people, even in this room, you might be thinking, maybe the majority of people in this room don't have the same issues you have. And the reality is, and maybe it's just because I get to hear a lot of people's issues, everybody's got issues, just like you do. Everybody has weaknesses. Everybody feels a little disqualified at times. Maybe you even have gotten to the point where you think there are other people who are smarter, so you can't do certain things, or they're stronger, or they have more abilities. Maybe you've even gotten down on yourself a little bit, that your weaknesses are so obvious that even God could not possibly use someone like you. Maybe you feel less than. Maybe even you feel like somehow you're a failure, or your life's been a failure, maybe even beyond repair. And I will tell you that the way God uses people in Scripture, including Abraham, by the way, if you go read his story in the rest of Genesis, God uses the most weak, failures, messed up, chaotic people. He takes their lives and he goes, oh, good, that means you're broken enough that you're not so egotistical that I can actually use you for some good things. It tends to be how God works with people. He doesn't work with people who are like, I got it all together, everything's figured out. Those people may be impressive to us, but to God, sometimes it's hard to use them. It's not just your strengths that God can use. He wants to use your struggles. He wants to use your past mistakes, your abuse, your divorce, your drug abuse, the times, maybe even the years, you felt like a horrible parent, your failures in school, your alcoholism, your physical ailments and diseases, your emotional and mental struggles and disorders, your lost job, your financial mistakes, any single thing you can think of that you are going through or that you have gone through. All of it can be used by God to be a blessing to others. The way I thought about it for myself is that your hurts, in some way, I don't know how it works, but in some way they become hope for other people. that it is in our weakness that we show God's strength. It is in our weakness, it is in our failures that we show how great God is. That the times that I have made the most difference in my life, in someone else's life, has been being vulnerable and honest about the things that I struggle with. And so if you take these ideas to go and to serve, you start to realize, oh, I can accept this mission. I can do something. I'm blessed to bless. This is what you have specifically been created to do. This is why God made you. And I challenge you, I strongly challenge you, not just encourage you, challenge you that this is your responsibility. To accept this as the mission of your life. That you are made to bless other people. And here's what I really want you to hear. It may be a creative thing that you have to figure out. You may have to pray a lot about it. You may have to try some things. You may even have to fail at things. That's fine. You will only regret it if you don't try it, if there's inaction. But make it your goal to do this more and more. And if you're wondering what this looks like, how do I do this? Does it have to be some big thing? The answer is no. I'll have you consider this young man, 19 years old, named Johnny. Johnny was a bagger at a local grocery store. And there's this woman named Barbara Glanz. She is kind of a motivational speaker. She goes around the country. Actually, she's kind of does that around the world. And she tells the story of Johnny the bagger. And it's this reminder that you can be a blessing right where you are. You don't have to compare yourself to anybody. You don't have to feel like a failure or you haven't figured something out. You can, anywhere you are, be on a mission for God. Because Johnny was nothing special. Again, a grocery store bagger. And so he goes to this training event where Barbara Glanz is speaking. And this Glanz, as I said, pretty impressive person, goes around the country, gives these talks. And that day, Johnny went because she was talking to 3,000 frontline workers for a supermarket chain. So big audience, bunch of people filled with managers and district managers, people who owned different parts of the chain, suppliers, clerks, and of course, baggers. And her message was simple. It's pretty simple all the time. Every interaction, she says, with another person is a chance to create a memory and to bless their life. She kind of hammers that home. Every interaction with another person is a chance to create a memory and to bless their life. So after her event, she left her phone number. And she did this, does this, tells people they can call her if they want. That freaks me out a little bit. I'm like, oh my goodness, there's no boundaries there. Everybody's going to call. She goes, almost nobody ever calls. Never happens. She says, if you want to talk more about how to help others, I always do this. Just let me know. Almost nobody ever calls. But about a month after that day, after that event, she gets a call. And on the other line is Johnny, the bagger. And Johnny starts right away, very proudly informed her. He says, I just want to tell you I have Down syndrome. And I'd like to share my story with you. And he said, Barbara, I liked what you talked about. But I don't think I am special enough to do anything for customers. I'm just a bagger. But when you talked, I had an idea. I want to remind people how great it is to be alive and give something positive to everyone. So Barbara explained this. Each day, Johnny told her, he would find a positive saying, something he read, something he heard, he would find a positive saying, and he would bring it home to his dad. And Johnny's dad would help him enter that saying 6 times down a single sheet of paper. And they would do that on the computer, and then Johnny, every night, would print off 50 copies of the same saying that was 6 times down the paper. He would then take out a pair of scissors every night, and he would carefully cut 300 copies with a pair of scissors of these positive sayings. And then he did this. On all 300, before he went to bed, he would sign every one, Johnny. And then Johnny would take the stack of pages and he would put them next to him while he worked, bagging groceries. And each time he finished bagging someone's groceries, he'd put the saying on the top of the last bag. And then he would stop what he was doing. He would look the person straight in the eye, every single person that he did the bagging for. And he'd say, "Hey, I put a great saying in your bag. I hope you have a really good day. Thank you for coming here today." Barbara heard Johnny's story on the phone and she praised him. She said, "That's a great idea. I'm so glad that you're trying that." But then a month after that, another month passed, and she gets another call. This time she got a call from the store manager of Johnny's store, and he said, "Barbara, I got to talk to you. You are not going to believe what is happening here. Johnny's checkout is 3 times longer than anyone else. In fact, it goes down the frozen food aisle sometimes. I have actually gone out on the floor," he explained to her, "and I have tried to move people to get them to the other checkout lines. One woman I asked kindly if I could usher her to another line. She gently grabbed my arm and said, 'I used to come to your store once a week, but now I stop every time I go so I can get Johnny's sayings.'" See, Johnny's doing more than filling bags with groceries. He's giving hope. He's giving the same hope of the resurrection that we talked about earlier. And he's giving a blessing to every single person. I will tell you this, people don't need more information in this world. In fact, I think people need less information in this world. People do not need more things to make them knowledgeable. What they need are words that fill their souls, actions that fill their souls, that let them know they are a human being and they count and they matter to God, that they are blessed just because they are alive. Now, of course, what makes the words that Johnny was giving is not that they're on a piece of paper. You can get one of those in a fortune cookie right now. No, it's that when people got them from Johnny, they're reminded of the beauty of one person forgetting their limitations. Forget your limitations. Please, forget your limitations. They're reminded of one person forgetting their limitations and seeking to make his life a blessing. In fact, whatever burdens Johnny carries in his own personal life, which I assume are heavy, those actually make his gift that much brighter, that much better. And do you know who's become the most important person at that grocery store? It's Johnny. The bagger. Here's how the story finishes. Another few months go by. The manager calls Barbara again. He said, "I just need you to know Johnny is not just changing checkout lines. He's actually completely transformed our store." The manager said, he goes, "Our floral department, we used to have these broken flowers, unused corsages. We have them all the time. They would just throw them away day after day. Now each of them goes through the aisles of the store and they always will find an elderly woman or a little girl and they thank her for being there. They give that to her and say, 'I hope you have a great day.'" He said, our butchers, they went and bought ribbon with their own money and they started putting ribbons on the cuts of meat that they wrap up for customers. And when they give the meat, they would tell them, "I hope you have a good day." Our butchers. And most importantly, he said, our shopping cart people are even trying to make carts with wheels that actually work. Now, hey. Now, if this can happen in a grocery store, it can happen anywhere. I'll say it like this: any of you can be Johnny with whatever your limitations are. Wherever you are, it's your choice to be important by how well you choose to bless others. Think of it this way: who's the most important person in your family? Who can be the most important person in your neighborhood or your school or your workplace? It's you. You have that in you. You can be Johnny. Because what Johnny does is not slick or complicated or calculated. He's just a bagger coming up with an idea to try, to bless others, to be on a mission for God. To paraphrase Genesis 12, all the people of the grocery store will be blessed through Johnny. As the worship team comes to lead us, and we take the Eucharist together, I'm going to put those ideas back up there. I'm going to ask you to ask yourself this question. What would it look like for me to be a blessing? How can I be a blessing? Maybe it's through my skills and strengths, or my sacrifice, or maybe my weaknesses. I encourage you to sit with that question today. We close this series on what does it mean to really live alongside God, to have a life that is worth living. This is a life worth living. Being on a mission for God every day, being intentional about it. So sit with that question, how can I be a blessing? Maybe that's your prayer today before you go to the table. God, how can I be a blessing? Make it obvious. My skills, my sacrifice, my weaknesses. And as you prepare to go, take a minute and consider these things. And be reminded you have been blessed to be a blessing. And as you contemplate that, when you're ready, I encourage you to go and respond to God at the table. We meet with Jesus there. As I said, Matthew 25 through 28 tells the end of Jesus' life. And part of the end of Jesus' life is that he died. He went on a cross. And he said, I will take my weakest moment, the worst of humanity, all of Genesis 3 through 11 wrapped up in us crucifying God. I will take and I will go up on that cross and I will bless the world. How inspiring. And so I encourage you, when you take the bread in honor of Christ's body that was broken on that cross, and you dip it into the wine or the juice in honor of Christ's blood that was spilled, you thank him for that blessing. The blessing that gives you life, gives you hope. And then you say, I will be a blessing. Let me say this prayer over each of you if you'll pray with me. God has said to you and is saying to you now, go from this place. See your life as an adventure for God. You are launched. God is making you into a great follower of his, and God will bless you. God will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And I say this to you, people of the journey, as you head to the table, all the people around you will be blessed because of your life. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.